the eldest of the women who served in that house, looking on the fair face of Faramir, wept, for all the people loved him. And she said, "Alas, if he should die! Would that there were kings in Gondor, as there were once upon a time," they say. "For it is said in old lore, the hands of the king are the hands of a healer, and so the rightful king could ever be known." And Gandalf, who stood by, said, "Men may long remember your words, Eorith, for there is hope in them. Maybe a king has indeed returned to Gondor, or have you not heard the strange tidings that have come to the city? I've been too busy with this and that to heed all the crying and shouting," she answered. "All I hope is that those murdering devils do not come to this house and trouble the sick." Then Gandalf went out in haste, and already the fire in the sky was burning out, and the smouldering hills were fading, while ash-grey evening crept over the fields. Now as the sun went down, Aragorn and Éomer and Imrahil drew near the city with their captains and knights. And when they came before the gate, Aragorn said,
"Behold the sun setting in a great fire. It's a sign of the end and fall of many things, and a change in the tides of the world. But this city and realm has rested in the charge of the stewards for many long years, and I fear that if I enter it unbidden, then doubt and debate may arise, which should not be while this war is fought. I will not enter it, nor make any claim, until it be seen whether we or Mordor shall prevail. Men shall pitch my tents upon the field, and here I will await the welcome of the lord of the city." But Éomer said, "Already you have raised the banner of the kings and displayed the tokens of Elendil's house. Will you suffer these to be challenged?"
"No," said Aragorn, "but I deem the time unripe, and I have no mind for strife except with our enemy and his servants."
And the prince Imrahil said,
"Your words, lord, are wise, if one who is a kinsman of the lord Denethor may counsel you in this matter. He is strong-willed and proud, but old, and his mood has been strange since his son was stricken down. Yet I would not have you remain like a beggar at the door."
"Not a beggar," said Aragorn. "Say a captain of the rangers, who are unused to cities and houses of stone." And he commanded that his banner should be furled, and he did off the star of the North Kingdom, and gave it to the keeping of the sons of Elrond.
Then the prince Imrahil and Éomer of Rohan left him, and passed through the city and the tumult of the people, and mounted to the citadel. And they came to the hall of the tower, seeking the steward. But they found his chair empty, and before the dais lay Théoden, king of the Mark, upon a bed of state. And 12 torches stood about it, and 12 guards, knights both of Rohan and Gondor. And the hangings of the bed were of green and white, but upon the king was laid the great cloth of gold up to his breast, and upon that his unsheathed sword, and at his feet his shield. The light of the torches shimmered in his white hair like sun in the spray of a fountain, but his face was fair and young, save that a peace lay on it beyond the reach of youth, and it seemed that he slept. When they had stood silent for a time beside the king, Imrahil said,
"Where is the steward? And where also is Mithrandir?"
And one of the guards answered,
"The steward of Gondor is in the houses of healing."
But Éomer said,
"Where is the Lady Éowyn, my sister? For surely she should be lying beside the king, and in no less honour. Where have they bestowed her?"
And Imrahil said,
"But the Lady Éowyn was yet living when they bore her hither. Did you not know?"
Then hope unlooked for came so suddenly to Éomer's heart, and with it the bite of care and fear renewed, that he said no more, but turned and went swiftly from the hall, and the prince followed him. And when they came forth, evening had fallen, and many stars were in the sky. And there came Gandalf on foot, and with him one cloaked in grey. And they met before the doors of the houses of healing. And they greeted Gandalf and said,
"We seek the steward, and men say that he is in this house. Has any hurt befallen him? And the Lady Éowyn, where is she?"
And Gandalf answered,
She lies within and is not dead, but is near death. But the Lord Faramir was wounded by an evil dart, as you have heard, and he is now the steward, for Denethor has departed, and his house is in ashes. And they were filled with grief and wonder at the tale that he told. But Imrahil said, So victory is shorn of gladness, and it is bitter bought, if both Gondor and Rohan are in one day bereft of their lords. Eomer rules the Rohirrim. Who shall rule the city meanwhile? Shall we not send now for the Lord Aragorn? And the cloaked man spoke and said, He is come. And they saw, as he stepped into the light of the lantern by the door, that it was Aragorn, wrapped in the grey cloak of Lorien above his mail, and bearing no other token than the green stone of Galadriel.
I have come because Gandalf begs me to do so, he said. But for the present I am but the captain of the Dúnedain of Arnor, and the Lord of Dol Amroth shall rule the city until Faramir awakes. But it is my counsel that Gandalf should rule us all in the days that follow, and in our dealings with the enemy. And they agreed upon that. Then Gandalf said, Let us not stay at the door, for the time is urgent. Let us enter. For it is only in the coming of Aragorn that any hope remains for the sick that lie in the house. Thus spake Eorath, wise woman of Gondor, The hands of the king are the hands of a healer, and so shall the rightful king be known. Then Aragorn entered first, and the others followed. And there at the door were two guards in the livery of the citadel, one tall, but the other scarce the height of a boy. And when he saw them, he cried aloud in surprise and joy,
Strider, how splendid! Do you know, I guessed it was you and the black ships, but they were all shouting corsairs and wouldn't listen to me. How did you do it?
Aragorn laughed and took the hobbit by the hand.
Well met indeed, he said, but there is not time yet for travellers' tales.
But Imrahil said to Eomer,
Is it thus that we speak to our kings? Yet maybe he will wear his crown in some other name.
And Aragorn, hearing him, turned and said,
Verily, for in the high tongue of old I am Elessar, the Elfstone, and Envinyatar, the Renewer.
And he lifted from his breast the green stone that lay there.
But Strider shall be the name of my house, if that be ever established. In the high tongue it will not sound so ill, and Telkontar I will be, and all the heirs of my body.
And with that they passed into the house. And as they went towards the rooms where the sick were tended, Gandalf told of the deeds of Eowyn and Merry Ardoch.
For, he said, long have I stood by them, and at first they spoke much in their dreaming before they sank into the deadly darkness. Also it is given to me to see many things far off.
Aragorn went first to Faramir, and then to the Lady Eowyn, and last to Merry. When he had looked on the faces of the sick and seen their hurts, he sighed.
Here I must put forth all such power and skill as is given to me, he said. Would that Elrond were here, for he is the eldest of all our race, and has the greater power.
And Eomer, seeing that he was sorrowful and weary, said, First you must rest, surely, and at the least eat a little. But Aragorn answered,
Nay, for these three, and most soon for Faramir, time is running out. All speed is needed.
Then he called to Eorath, and he said,
You have store in this house of the herbs of healing?
Yes, lord, she answered, but not enough, I reckon, for all that will need them. But I am sure I don't know where we shall find more, for all things are amiss in these dreadful days, what with fires and burnings, and the lads that run errands so few, and all the roads blocked. Why, it is days out of count since a carrier came in from Las Arnach to the market. But we do our best in this house with what we have, as I am sure your lordship will know.
I will judge that when I see, said Aragorn.
One thing also is short, time for speech. Have you Arthelas?
I don't know, I'm sure, lord, she answered. At least not by that name. I'll go and ask of the herb master. He knows all the old names.
It is also called Kingsfoil, said Aragorn, and maybe you know it by that name, for so the country folk call it in these latter days.
Oh, that, said Eorath,
"Well, if your lordship had named it at first, I could have told you. No, we have none of it, I'm sure." "Why, I've never heard that it had any great virtue. And indeed, I've often said to my sisters when we came upon it growing in the woods, 'Kingsfoil,' I said, 'tis a strange name, and I wonder why 'tis called so. For if I were a king, I would have plants more bright in my garden. Still it smells sweet when bruised, does it not? If sweet is the right word, wholesome, maybe, is nearer.'"
"Wholesome, verily," said Aragorn. "And now, dame, if you love the Lord Faramir, run as quick as your tongue and get me Kingsfoil if there is a leaf in the city."
"And if not," said Gandalf, "I will ride to Las Arnach with the Aurith behind me, and she shall take me to the woods, but not to her sisters, and Shadowfax shall show her the meaning of haste."
When Eorith was gone, Aragorn bade the other women to make water hot. Then he took Faramir's hand in his, and laid the other hand upon the sick man's brow. It was drenched with sweat, but Faramir did not move or make any sign, and seemed hardly to breathe.
"He is nearly spent," said Aragorn, turning to Gandalf. "But this comes not from the wound. See, that is healing. Had he been smitten by some dart of the Nazgul, as you thought, he would have died that night. This hurt was given by some Southron arrow, I guess. Who drew it forth? Was it kept?"
"I drew it forth," said Imrahil, "and staunched the wound. But I did not keep the arrow, for we had much to do. It was, as I remember, just such a dart as the Southrons use. Yet I believed that it came from the shadows above, for else his fever and sickness were not to be understood, since the wound was not deep or vital. How, then, do you read the matter?"
"Weariness. Grief for his father's mood. A wound. And over all the black breath," said Aragorn. "He is a man of staunch will, for already he had come close under the shadow before ever he rode to battle on the outwalls.
Slowly the dark must have crept on him, even as he fought and strove to hold his outpost. Would that I could have been here sooner."
Thereupon the herbmaster entered.
"Your lordship asked for Kingsfoil, as the rustics name it," he said, "or Athelas in the noble tongue, or to those who know somewhat of the Valinorian."
"I do so," said Aragorn, "and I care not whether you say now Asea Aranian or Kingsfoil, so long as you have some."
"Your pardon, lord," said the man. "I see you are a law-master, not merely a captain of war, but alas, sir, we don't keep this thing in the houses of healing, where only the gravely hurt or sick are tended. For it has no virtue that we know of, save perhaps to sweeten a fouled air, or to drive away some passing heaviness. Unless, of course, you give heed to rhymes of old days, which women such as our good Eorith still repeat without understanding. When the black breath blows, and death's shadow grows, and all lights pass, come Athelas, come Athelas, life to the dying, in the king's hand lying. It is but a doggerel I fear, garbled in the memory of old wives. Its meaning I leave to your judgment, if indeed it has any, but old folk still use an infusion of the herb for headaches."
"Then in the name of the king, go and find some old man of less lore and more wisdom who keeps some in his house," cried Gandalf.
Now Aragorn knelt beside Faramir, and held a hand upon his brow, and those that watched felt that some great struggle was going on, for Aragorn's face grew grey with weariness, and ever and anon he called the name of Faramir, but each time more faintly to the hearing, as if Aragorn himself was removed from them, and walked afar in some dark vale, calling for one that was lost. And at last Beregild came running in, and he bore 6 leaves in a cloth.
"It is Kingsfoil, sir," he said, "but not fresh, I fear. It must have been culled 2 weeks ago at the least. I hope it will serve, sir."
Then looking at Faramir, he burst into tears.
But Aragorn smiled. "It will serve," he said. "The worst is now over. Stay and be comforted."
Then taking 2 leaves, he laid them on his hands and breathed on them, and then he crushed them, and straightway a living freshness filled the room, as if the air itself awoke and tingled, sparkling with joy. And then he cast the leaves into the bowls of steaming water that were brought to him, and at once all hearts were lightened. For the fragrance that came to each was like a memory of dewy mornings of unshadowed sun in some land of which the fair world in spring is itself but a fleeting memory. But Aragorn stood up as one refreshed, and his eyes smiled as he held a bowl before Faramir's dreaming face.
"Well now, who would have believed it?"
said Eorath to a woman that stood beside her.
"The weed is better than I thought. It reminds me of the roses of Imloth Melwy when I was a lass, and no king could ask for better."
Suddenly Faramir stirred, and he opened his eyes, and he looked on Aragorn, who bent over him, and a light of knowledge and love was kindled in his eyes, and he spoke softly.
"My lord, you called me. I come. What does the king command?"
"Walk no more in the shadows, but awake," said Aragorn. "You are weary. Rest a while, and take food, and be ready when I return."
"I will, lord," said Faramir. "Who would lie idle when the king has returned?"
"Farewell, then, for a while," said Aragorn. "I must go to others who need me."
And he left the chamber with Gandalf and Imrahil, but Beregond and his son remained behind, unable to contain their joy. As he followed Gandalf and shut the door, Pippin heard Eorath exclaim,
"King, did you hear that? What did I say? The hands of a healer, I said."
And soon the word had gone out from the house that the king was indeed come among them, and after war he brought healing, and the news ran through the city.
But Aragorn came to Eowyn, and he said, "Here there is a grievous hurt and a heavy blow. The arm that was broken has been tended with due skill, and it will mend in time, if she has the strength to live. It is the shield arm that is maimed, but the chief evil comes through the sword arm. In that there now seems no life, although it is unbroken. Alas, for she was pitted against a foe beyond the strength of her mind or body, and those who will take a weapon to such an enemy must be sterner than steel, if the very shock shall not destroy them. It was an evil doom that set her in his path, for she is a fair maiden, fairest lady of a house of queens, and yet I know not how I should speak of her. When I first looked on her and perceived her unhappiness, it seemed to me that I saw a white flower standing straight and proud, shapely as a lily, and yet knew that it was hard, as if wrought by elf rites out of steel. Or was it, maybe, a frost that turned its sap to ice? And so it stood, bittersweet, still fair to see, but stricken, soon to fall and die. Her malady begins far back before this day, does it not, Eomer?"
"I marvel that you should ask me, lord," he answered, "for I hold you blameless in this matter, as in all else. Yet I knew not that Eowyn, my sister, was touched by any frost until she first looked on you. Care and dread she had, and shared with me, in the days of Wormtongue and the king's bewitchment. And she tended the king in growing fear, but that did not bring her to this pass."
"My friend," said Gandalf, "you had horses, and deeds of arms, and the free fields. But she, born in the body of a maid, had a spirit and courage at least the match of yours. Yet she was doomed to wait upon an old man whom she loved as a father, and watch him falling into a mean, dishonored dotage, and her part seemed to her more ignoble than that of the staff he leaned on. Think you that Wormtongue had poison only for Theoden's ears? Dotard, what is the house of Eol but a thatched barn where brigands drink in the reek, and their brats roll on the floor among their dogs? Have you not heard those words before? Saruman spoke them, the teacher of Wormtongue. Though I do not doubt that Wormtongue at home wrapped their meaning in terms more cunning. My lord, if your sister's love for you, and her will, still bent to her duty, had not restrained her lips, you might have heard even such things as these escape them. But who knows what she spoke to the darkness, alone, in the bitter watches of the night, when all her life seemed shrinking, and the walls of her bower closing in about her, a hutch to trammel some wild thing in?
Then Aemer was silent, and looked on his sister, as if pondering anew all the days of their past life together. But Aragorn said,
I saw also what you saw, Aemer. Few other griefs amid the ill chances of this world have more bitterness and shame for a man's heart than to behold the love of a lady so fair and brave that cannot be returned. Sorrow and pity have followed me ever since I left her desperate in Dunharrow and rode to the paths of the dead. And no fear upon that way was so present as the fear for what might befall her. And yet, Aemer, I say to you that she loves you more truly than me. For you she loves and knows, but in me she loves only a shadow and a thought, a hope of glory and great deeds, and lands far from the fields of Rohan. I have, maybe, the power to heal her body, and to recall her from the dark valley. But to what she will awake, hope or forgetfulness or despair, I don't know. And if to despair, then she will die. Unless other healing comes, which I cannot bring. Alas! For her deeds have set her among the queens of great renown.
Then Aragorn stooped and looked in her face, and it was indeed white as a lily, cold as frost, and hard as graven stone. But he bent and kissed her on the brow, and called her softly, saying,
Eowyn, Eowyn's daughter, awake. For your enemy has passed away. She didn't stir, but now she began again to breathe deeply, so that her breast rose and fell beneath the white linen of the sheet.
Once more Aragorn bruised 2 leaves of Arthelas and cast them into steaming water. And he laved her brow with it, and her right arm lying cold and nerveless on the coverlet. Then, whether Aragorn had indeed some forgotten power of westerness, or whether it was but his words of the Lady Eowyn that wrought on them, as the sweet influence of the herbs stole about the chamber, it seemed to those who stood by that a keen wind blew through the window, and it bore no scent, but was an air wholly fresh and clean and young, as if it had not before been breathed by any living thing, and came new-made from snowy mountains high beneath a dome of stars, or from shores of silver far away, washed by seas of foam.
"Awake, Eowyn, Lady of Rohan," said Aragorn again,
and he took her right hand in his, and felt it warm with life returning.
"Awake! The shadow is gone, and all darkness is washed clean."
Then he laid her hand in Eomer's, and stepped away.
"Call her," he said,
and he passed silently from the chamber.
"Eowyn! Eowyn!"
cried Eomer amid his tears. But she opened her eyes and said,
"Eomer, what joy is this? For they said that you were slain.
Nay, but that was only the dark voices in my dream. How long have I been dreaming?"
"Not long, my sister," said Eomer, "but think no more on it." "I am strangely weary," she said. "I must rest a little. But tell me, what of the Lord of the Mark? Alas! Do not tell me that that was a dream, for I know that it was not. He is dead as he foresaw."
"He is dead," said Eomer, "but he bade me say farewell to Eowyn, dearer than daughter. He lies now in great honour in the citadel of Gondor."
"That is grievous," she said,
"and yet it is good beyond all that I dared hope in the dark days, when it seemed that the house of Eol was sunk in honour less than any shepherd's cot. And what of the king's esquire, the halfling?"
"Eomer, you shall make him a knight of the Riddermark, for he is valiant."
"He lies nearby in this house, and I will go to him," said Gandalf.
Éomer shall stay here for a while. But don't speak yet of war or woe until you're made whole again. Great gladness it is to see you wake again to health and hope, so valiant a lady."
"To health," said Eowyn.
"It may be so, at least while there is an empty saddle of some fallen rider that I can fill, and there are deeds to do. But to hope, I don't know."
Gandalf and Pippin came to Merry's room, and there they found Aragorn standing by the bed.
"Poor old Merry!" cried Pippin,
and he ran to the bedside, for it seemed to him that his friend looked worse, and a greyness was in his face, as if a weight of years of sorrow lay on him, and suddenly a fear seized Pippin that Merry would die.
"Do not be afraid," said Aragorn. "I came in time, and I've called him back. He's weary now, and grieved, and he's taken a hurt like the Lady Eowyn, daring to smite that deadly thing. But these evils can be amended, so strong and gay a spirit is in him. His grief he will not forget, but it won't darken his heart. It will teach him wisdom."
Then Aragorn laid his hand on Merry's head, and passing his hand gently through the brown curls, he touched the eyelids and called him by name. And when the fragrance of Arthelus stole through the room, like the scent of orchards, and of heather in the sunshine full of bees, suddenly Merry awoke, and he said,
"I'm hungry. What's the time?"
"Past supper time now," said Pippin, "though I dare say I could bring you something, if they'll let me."
"They will indeed," said Gandalf, "and anything else that this rider of Rohan may desire, if it can be found in Minas Tirith, where his name is in honour."
"Good," said Merry. "Then I'd like supper first, and after that a pipe." At that his face clouded.
"No, not a pipe. I don't think I'll smoke again."
"Why not?" said Pippin.
"Well," answered Merry slowly, "he's dead. It's brought it all back to me. Almost the last thing he ever said. I shan't ever be able to smoke again without thinking of him, and that day, Pippin, when he rode up to Isengard and was so polite." "Smoke, then, and think of him," said Aragorn. "For here was a gentle heart and a great king that kept his oaths, and he rose out of the shadows to a last fair morning. Though your service to him was brief, it should be a memory glad and honourable to the end of your days."
Merry smiled.
"Well, then," he said, "if Strider will provide what's needed, I'll smoke and think. I had some of Saruman's best in my pack, but what became of it in the battle, I'm sure I don't know."
"Master Meriadoc," said Aragorn, "if you think that I've passed through the mountains and the realm of Gondor with fire and sword to bring herbs to a careless soldier who throws away his gear, you're mistaken. If your pack has not been found, then you must send for the herb master of this house. And he'll tell you that he didn't know that the herb you desire had any virtues, but that it's called Westman's Weed by the vulgar, and Galenus by the noble, and other names in other tongues more learned. And after adding a few half-forgotten rhymes that he doesn't understand, he'll regretfully inform you that there is none in the house, and he'll leave you to reflect on the history of tongues. And so now must I, for I haven't slept in such a bed as this since I rode from Dunharrow, nor eaten since the dark before dawn."
Merry seized his hand and kissed it. "I'm frightfully sorry," he said. "Go at once. Ever since that night at Bree we've been such a nuisance to you, but it's the way of my people to use light words at such times and say less than they mean. We fear to say too much. It robs us of the right words when a jest is out of place."
"I know that well, or I would not deal with you in the same way," said Aragorn. "May the Shire live for ever unwithered."
And kissing Merry he went out, and Gandalf went with him. Pippin remained behind.
"Was there ever anyone like him?" he said. "Except Gandalf, of course. I think they must be related.
"My dear ass, your pack is lying by your bed, and you had it on your back when I met you. He saw it all the time, of course. And anyway, I have some stuff of my own. Come on now. Long bottom leaf it is. Fill up while I run and see about some food, and then let's be easy for a bit. Dear me, we Tooks and Bandybucks, we can't live long on the heights."
"No," said Mary, "I can't. Not yet, at any rate. But at least, Pippin, we can now see them and honour them. It's best to love first what you're fitted to love, I suppose. You must start somewhere and have some roots, and the soil of the Shire is deep. Still, there are things deeper and higher, and not a gaffer could tend his garden in what he calls peace but for them, whether he knows about them or not. I'm glad that I know about them, a little. But I don't know why I'm talking like this. Where is that leaf? And get my pipe out of my pack, if it isn't broken." Aragorn and Gandalf went now to the Warden of the Houses of Healing, and they counselled him that Faramir and Eowyn should remain there and still be tended with care for many days.
"The Lady Eowyn," said Aragorn, "will wish soon to rise and depart, but she should not be permitted to do so, if you can in any way restrain her, until at least 10 days be passed." "As for Faramir," said Gandalf, "he will soon learn that his father is dead. But the full tale of the madness of Denethor should not be told to him until he is quite healed and has duties to do. See that Beregond and the Perian who are present do not speak to him of these things yet. And the other Perian, Meriadoc, who is under my care, what of him?" said the Warden. "It's likely that he'll be fit to arise tomorrow for a short while," said Aragorn. "Let him do so if he wishes. He may walk a little in the care of his friends." "They are a remarkable race," said the Warden, nodding his head. "Very tough in the fibre, I deem." At the doors of the houses, many were already gathered to see Aragorn, and they followed after him. And when at last he had supped, men came and prayed that he would heal their kinsmen or their friends whose lives were in peril through hurt or wound, or who lay under the black shadow. And Aragorn arose and went out, and he sent for the sons of Elrond, and together they laboured far into the night. And word went through the city, "The king is come again indeed!" And they named him Elfstone, because of the green stone that he wore, and so the name which it was foretold at his birth that he should bear was chosen for him by his own people. And when he could labour no more, he cast his cloak about him, and slipped out of the city, and went to his tent just ere dawn, and slept for a little. And in the morning the banner of Dol Amroth, a white ship like a swan upon blue water, floated from the tower, and men looked up and wondered if the coming of the king had been but a dream. Chapter 9. The Last Debate. The morning came after the day of battle, and it was fair with light clouds and the wind turning westward. Legolas and Gimli were early abroad, and they begged leave to go up into the city, for they were eager to see Merry and Pippin. "It's good to learn that they're still alive," said Gimli, "for they cost us great pains in our march over Rohan, and I would not have such pains all wasted."
Together the elf and the dwarf entered Minas Tirith, and folk that saw them pass marvelled to see such companions, for Legolas was fair of face beyond the measure of men, and he sang an elven song in a clear voice as he walked in the morning. But Gimli stalked beside him, stroking his beard and staring about him.
"There is some good stonework here," he said, as he looked at the walls, "but also some that is less good, and the streets could be better contrived. When Aragorn comes into his own, I shall offer him the service of Stone Rites of the Mountain, and we will make this a town to be proud of."
"They need more gardens," said Legolas. "The houses are dead, and there is too little here that grows and is glad. If Aragorn comes into his own, the people of the wood shall bring him birds that sing and trees that do not die. At length they came to the Prince Imrahil, and Legolas looked at him and bowed low, for he saw that here indeed was one who had elven blood in his veins. "Hail, Lord," he said. "It is long since the people of Nimrodel left the woodlands of Lorien, and yet still one may see that not all sail from Amroth's haven west over water."
"So it is said in the lore of my land," said the prince. "Yet never has one of the fair folk been seen there for years beyond count, and I marvel to see one here now in the midst of sorrow and war. What do you seek?"
"I am one of the nine companions who set out with Mithrandir from Imladris," said Legolas. "And with this dwarf, my friend, I came with the Lord Aragorn. But now we wish to see our friends, Meriadoc and Peregrine, who are in your keeping, we are told."
"You'll find them in the Houses of Healing, and I'll lead you thither," said Imrahil.
"It will be enough if you send one to guide us, Lord," said Legolas. "For Aragorn sends this message to you. He doesn't wish to enter the city again at this time. Yet there is need for the captains to hold council at once, and he prays that you and Éomer of Rohan will come down to his tents as soon as may be. Mithrandir is already there."
"We'll come," said Imrahil, and they parted with courteous words.
"That is a fair lord and a great captain of men," said Legolas. "If Gondor has such men still in these days of fading, great must have been its glory in the days of its rising."
"And doubtless the good stonework is the older, and was wrought in the first building," said Gimli. "It is ever so with the things that men begin. There is a frost in spring, or a blight in summer, and they fail of their promise."
"Yet seldom do they fail of their seed," said Legolas. "And that will lie in the dust and rot to spring up again in times and places unlooked for. The deeds of men will outlast us, Gimli."
"And yet come to naught in the end, but might have been, I guess," said the dwarf.
"To that the elves know not the answer," said Legolas. With that the servant of the prince came and led them to the Houses of Healing, and there they found their friends in the garden, and their meeting was a merry one. For a while they walked and talked, rejoicing for a brief space in peace and rest under the morning high up in the windy circles of the city. Then, when Merry became weary, they went and sat upon the wall with the greensward of the Houses of Healing behind them, and away southward before them was the Anduin, glittering in the sun as it flowed away, out of the sight even of Legolas, into the wide flats and green haze of Lebenin and South Ithilien. And now Legolas fell silent, while the others talked, and he looked out against the sun, and as he gazed he saw white seabirds beating up the river. "Look!" he cried. "Gulls! They are flying far inland. A wonder they are to me, and a trouble to my heart. Never in all my life had I met them, until we came to Pelagia, and there I heard them crying in the air as we rode to the Battle of the Ships. Then I stood still, forgetting war in Middle-earth, for their wailing voices spoke to me of the sea. The sea, alas, I have not yet beheld it, but deep in the hearts of all my kindred lies the sea-longing, which it is perilous to stir. Alas, for the gulls, no peace shall I have again under beech or under elm."
"Say not so," said Gimli. "There are countless things still to see in Middle-earth, and great works to do. But if all the fair folk take to the havens, it will be a duller world for those who are doomed to stay."
"Dull and dreary indeed," said Merry. "You must not go to the havens, Legolas. There will always be some folk, big or little, and even a few wise dwarves like Gimli who need you. At least I hope so. Though I feel somehow that the worst of this war is still to come. How I wish it was all over, and well over." "Don't be so gloomy," cried Pippin. "The sun is shining, and here we are together for a day or two at least. I want to hear more about you all. Come, Gimli,
You and Legolas have mentioned your strange journey with Strider about a dozen times already this morning, but you haven't told me anything about it.
The sun may shine here, said Gimli, but there are memories of that road that I don't wish to recall out of the darkness. Had I known what was before me, I think that not for any friendship would I have taken the paths of the dead.
The paths of the dead? Said Pippin. I heard Aragorn say that, and I wondered what he could mean. Won't you tell us some more?
Not willingly, said Gimli, for upon that road I was put to shame. Gimli Gloin's son, who had deemed himself more tough than men and hardier under earth than any elf. But neither did I prove, and I was held to the road only by the will of Aragorn.
And by the love of him also, said Legolas. For all those who come to know him come to love him after his own fashion, even the cold maiden of the Rohirrim. It was at early morn of the day ere you came there, Merry, that we left Dunharrow, and such a fear was on all the folk that none would look on our going, save the Lady Eowyn, who lies now hurt in the house below. There was grief at that parting, and I was grieved to behold it.
Alas, I had heart only for myself, said Gimli. Nay, I'll not speak of that journey.
He fell silent, but Pippin and Merry were so eager for news that at last Legolas said,
I'll tell you enough for your peace, for I felt not the horror, and I feared not the shadows of men, powerless and frail as I deemed them.
Swiftly then he told the haunted road under the mountains, and the dark tryst at Erech, and the great ride thence, 90 leagues and 3, to Pelargir on Anduin.
4 days and nights, and on into a fifth we rode from the Black Stone, he said. And lo, in the darkness of Mordor my hope rose, for in that gloom the shadow host seemed to grow stronger and more terrible to look upon. Some I saw riding, some striding, yet all moving with the same great speed. Silent they were, but there was a gleam in their eyes. In the uplands of Lomardon they overtook our horses, and swept round us, and would have passed us by, if Aragorn had not forbidden them. At his command they fell back. Even the shades of men are obedient to his will, I thought. They may serve his needs yet. 1 day of light we rode, and then came the day without dawn, and still we rode on, and Kiril and Ringlow we crossed. And on the 3rd day we came to Linhir, above the mouth of Gilrine. And there men of Larmadon contested the fords with fell folk of Umbar and Harad, who had sailed up the river. But defenders and foes alike gave up the battle and fled when we came, crying out that the king of the dead was upon them. Only Angbor, lord of Larmadon, had the heart to abide us, and Aragorn bade him gather his folk and come behind, if they dared, when the grey host had passed. At Pelargir the heir of Isildur will have need of you, he said. Thus we crossed over Gilrine, driving the allies of Mordor in rout before us, and then we rested a while. But soon Aragorn arose, saying, Lo, already Minas Tirith is assailed. I fear that it will fall ere we come to its aid. So we mounted again before night had passed, and went on with all the speed that our horses could endure over the plains of Lebenin. Legolas paused and sighed, and turning his eyes southward, softly he sang,
Silver flow the streams from Kelos to Erwy, in the green fields of Lebenin. Tall grows the grass there, in the wind from the sea, the white lilies sway. And the golden bells are shaken of Marlost and Alfirin. In the green fields of Lebenin, in the wind from the sea.
Green are those fields in the songs of my people, but they were dark then, grey wastes in the blackness before us. And over the wide land, trampling unheeded the grass and the flowers, we hunted our foes through a day and a night, until we came at the bitter end to the great river at last.
Then I thought in my heart that we drew near to the sea, for wide was the water in the darkness, and sea-birds innumerable cried on its shores. Alas for the wailing of the gulls! Did not the lady tell me to beware of them? And now I cannot forget them.
For my part I heeded them not, said Gimli, for we came then at last upon battle in earnest. There at Pelagia lay the main fleet of Umbar, 50 great ships and smaller vessels beyond count. Many of those that we pursued had reached the havens before us, and brought their fear with them, and some of the ships had put off, seeking to escape down the river or to reach the far shore, and many of the smaller craft were ablaze. But the Haradrim, being now driven to the brink, turned at bay, and they were fierce in despair, and they laughed when they looked on us, for they were a great army still. But Aragorn halted and cried with a great voice, Now come, by the Blackstone I call you. And suddenly the shadow host that had hung back at the last came up like a grey tide, sweeping all away before it. Faint cries I heard, and dim horns blowing, and a murmur as of countless far voices. It was like the echo of some forgotten battle in the dark years long ago. Pale swords were drawn, but I know not whether their blades would still bite, for the dead needed no longer any weapon but fear. None would withstand them. To every ship they came that was drawn up, and then they passed over the water to those that were anchored, and all the mariners were filled with the madness of terror and leapt overboard, save the slaves chained to the oars. Reckless we rowed among our fleeing foes, driving them like leaves, until we came to the shore. And then, to each of the great ships that remained, Aragorn sent one of the Dúnedain, and they comforted the captives that were aboard, and bade them put aside fear and be free. Ere that dark day ended, none of the enemy were left to resist us. All were drowned, or were flying south in the hope to find their own lands upon foot. Strange and wonderful, I thought it, that the designs of Mordor should be overthrown by such wraiths of fear and darkness. With its own weapons was it worsted.
Strange indeed, said Legolas. In that hour I looked on Aragorn and thought how great and terrible a lord he might have become in the strength of his will, had he taken the ring to himself. Not for naught does Mordor fear him, but nobler is his spirit than the understanding of Sauron. For is he not of the children of Lúthien? Never shall that line fail, though the years may lengthen beyond count.
Beyond the eyes of the dwarves are such foretellings, said Gimli. But mighty indeed was Aragorn that day. No, all the black fleet was in his hands, and he chose the greatest ship to be his own, and he went up into it. Then he let sound a great concourse of trumpets taken from the enemy, and the shadow host withdrew to the shore. There they stood silent, hardly to be seen, save for a red gleam in their eyes that caught the glare of the ships that were burning. And Aragorn spoke in a loud voice to the dead men, crying, Hear now the words of the heir of Isildur. Your oath is fulfilled. Go back and trouble not the valleys ever again. Depart and be at rest. And thereupon the king of the dead stood out before the host and broke his spear and cast it down. Then he bowed low and turned away, and swiftly the whole grey host drew off and vanished like a mist that is driven back by a sudden wind, and it seemed to me that I awoke from a dream. That night we rested while others laboured, for there were many captives set free, and many slaves released who had been folk of Gondor taken in raids, and soon also there was a great gathering of men out of Lebenin and the Aethir, and Angbor of Lamadon came up, with all the horsemen that he could muster. Now that the fear of the dead was removed, they came to aid us and to look on the heir of Isildur, for the rumour of that name had run like fire in the dark. And that is near the end of our tale. For during that evening and night many ships were made ready and manned, and in the morning the fleet set forth. Long past, it now seems, yet it was but the morn of the day yesterday, the sixth since we rode from Dunharrow. But still Aragorn was driven by fear that time was too short. "It is 40 leagues and 2 from Pelagia to the landings of the Harland," he said. "Yet to the Harland we must come to-morrow or fail utterly." The oars were now wielded by free men, and manfully they laboured. Yet slowly we passed up the great river, for we strove against its stream, and though that is not swift down in the south, we had no help of wind. Heavy would my heart have been, for all our victory at the havens, if Legolas had not laughed suddenly. "Up with your beard, Durin's son," he said, "for thus is it spoken, oft hope is born when all is forlorn." But what hope he saw from afar he wouldn't tell. When night came it did but deepen the darkness, and our hearts were hot. For away in the north we saw a red glow under the cloud, and Aragorn said, "Minas Tirith is burning." But at midnight hope was indeed born anew. Sea-crafty men of the Aether, gazing southward, spoke of a change coming with a fresh wind from the sea. Long ere day the masted ships hoisted sail, and our speed grew until dawn whitened the foam of our prows. And so it was, as you know, that we came in the 3rd hour of the morning with a fair wind and the sun unveiled, and we unfurled the great standard in battle. It was a great day and a great hour, whatever may come after.
"Follow what may, great deeds are not lessened in worth," said Legolas. "Great deed was the riding of the paths of the dead, and great it shall remain, though none be left in Gondor to sing of it in the days that are to come."
"And let me well befall," said Gimli, "for the faces of Aragorn and Gandalf are grave. Much I wonder what counsels they are taking in the tents there below. For my part, like Merry, I wish that with our victory the war was now over. Yet whatever is still to do, I hope to have a part in it, for the honour of the folk of the Lonely Mountain."
"And I for the folk of the Great Wood," said Legolas, "and for the love of the Lord of the White Tree." Then the companions fell silent, but a while they sat there in the high place, each busy with his own thoughts, while the captains debated. When the Prince Imrahil had parted from Legolas and Gimli, at once he set for Eomer. And he went down with him from the city, and they came to the tents of Aragorn that were set up on the field not far from the place where King Theoden had fallen. And there they took counsel together with Gandalf and Aragorn and the sons of Elrond.
"My lords," said Gandalf, "listen to the words of the steward of Gondor before he died. You may triumph on the fields of the Pelennor for a day, but against the power that has now arisen there is no victory. I do not bid you despair as he did, but to ponder the truth in these words. The stones of seeing do not lie, and not even the Lord of Barad-dûr can make them do so. He can, maybe, by his will, choose what things shall be seen by weaker minds, or cause them to mistake the meaning of what they see. Nonetheless, it cannot be doubted that when Denethor saw great forces arrayed against him in Mordor, and more still being gathered, he saw that which truly is. Hardly has our strength sufficed to beat off the first great assault. The next will be greater. This war, then, is without final hope, as Denethor perceived. Victory cannot be achieved by arms, whether you sit here to endure siege after siege, or march out to be overwhelmed beyond the river. You have only a choice of evils, and prudence would counsel you to strengthen such strong places as you have, and there await the onset, for so shall the time before your end be made a little longer."
"Then you would have us retreat to Minas Tirith, or Dol Amroth, or to Dunharrow, and there sit like children on sand castles when the tide is flowing?" said Imrahil.
"That would be no new counsel," said Gandalf. "Have you not done this and little more in all the days of Denethor? But no. I said this would be prudent. I do not counsel prudence. I said victory could not be achieved by arms. I still hope for victory, but not by arms. For into the midst of all these policies comes the Ring of Power, the foundation of Barad-dûr, and the hope of Sauron. Concerning this thing, my lords, you now all know enough for the understanding of our plight, and of Sauron's. If he regains it, your valour is vain, and his victory will be swift and complete, so complete that none can foresee the end of it while this world lasts. If it is destroyed, then he'll fall, and his fall will be so low that none can foresee his arising ever again. For he will lose the best part of the strength that was native to him in his beginning, and all that was made or begun with that power will crumble, and he will be maimed forever, becoming a mere spirit of malice that gnaws itself in the shadows, but cannot again grow or take shape. And so a great evil of this world will be removed. Other evils there are that may come, for Sauron is himself but a servant or emissary. Yet it is not our part to muster all the tides of the world, but to do what is in us for the succour of those years wherein we are set, uprooting the evil in the fields that we know, so that those who live after may have clean earth to till. What weather they shall have is not ours to rule. Now Sauron knows all this, and he knows that this precious thing which he lost has been found again. But he does not yet know where it is, or so we hope. And therefore he is now in great doubt. For if we have found this thing, there are some among us with strength enough to wield it. That too he knows. For do I not guess rightly, Aragorn, that you have shown yourself to him in the stone of Orthonk?
I did so ere I rode from the Hornburg, answered Aragorn. I deemed that the time was ripe, and that the stone had come to me for just such a purpose.
It was then 10 days since the ring-bearer went east from Rauros, and the eye of Sauron, I thought, should be drawn out from his own land. Too seldom has he been challenged since he returned to his tower. Though if I had foreseen how swift would be his onset in answer, maybe I should not have dared to show myself. Bare time was given me to come to your aid.
But how is this? Said Éomer. All is vain, you say, if he has the ring? Why should he think it not vain to assail us, if we have it?
He is not yet sure, said Gandalf, and he has not built up his power by waiting until his enemies are secure, as we have done. Also, we could not learn how to wield the full power all in a day. Indeed, it can be used only by one master alone, not by many, and he will look for a time of strife, ere one of the great among us makes himself master and puts down the others. In that time the ring might aid him, if he were certain. He is watching. He sees much and hears much. His Nazgûl are still abroad. They passed over this field ere the sunrise, though few of the weary and sleeping were aware of them. He studies the signs, the sword that robbed him of his treasure remade, the winds of fortune turning in our favour, and the defeat unlooked for of his first assault, the fall of his great captain. His doubt will be growing, even as we speak here. His eye is now straining towards us, blind almost to all else that is moving. So we must keep it. Therein lies all our hope. This, then, is my counsel. We have not the ring. In wisdom or great folly it has been sent away to be destroyed, lest it destroy us. Without it we cannot by force defeat his force. But we must at all costs keep his eye from his true peril. We cannot achieve victory by arms, but by arms we can give the ring-bearer his only chance, frail though it may be. As Aragorn has begun, so we must go on. We must push Sauron to his last throw. We must call out his hidden strength, so that he shall empty his land. We must march out to meet him at once. We must make ourselves the bait, though his jaws should close on us. He will take that bait, in hope and in greed, for he will think that in such rashness he sees the pride of the new ring-lord, and he will say, "So, he pushes out his neck too soon and too far. Let him come on, and behold, I will have him in a trap from which he cannot escape. There I will crush him, and what he has taken in his insolence shall be mine again for ever." We must walk open-eyed into that trap with courage, but small hope for ourselves, For, my lords, it may well prove that we ourselves shall perish utterly in a black battle far from the living lands, so that even if Barad-dûr be thrown down, we shall not live to see a new age. But this, I deem, is our duty. And better so than to perish nonetheless.